Blog Talk Radio.
These are our songs of joy and sadness. They were given life by slaves who toiled in the fields of America, sweat on their brows, hope in their hearts. These are our songs of happiness and sorrow. The soul of black folk, coupled with religious fervor and vigorous rhythms that hint of their African heritage, these are our songs of hope. Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven shall ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Every voice and sing. The road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers died. Lift every voice and sing.
Tonight, at our common ground, we take time to pay tribute to those warriors, resistors, and builders who brought us thus far on our way.
And thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we are going to honor those who came before us, those who parted the waters for progress and process of black Americans in this country. Some of the names you will know and some of them you will not know. We'll also be talking about the Unsupreme Court, how Americans should be analyzing and examining who and what and the conduct of those members of the Supreme Court of the United States. We'll also be looking at one specific court justice, Justice Clarence Thomas. Has he now, in fact, had an impeachable offense? I think there's one to dance, two to tango. And I think that Clarence Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas, is probably on his search for that third move. We'll also be talking about what seems to be an increasing obsession about Ronald Reagan, comparing our current president, the current administration, examining every measure of our political lives against that which seems to be a revisionist history of Ronald Reagan. And, of course, we'll be talking about black history, honoring black warriors, resistors, and builders. And we thank you so very much for being with us. And my co-host tonight is Alpha. Alpha, good evening, and thank you for being with us, too.
Good evening, Janice. How are you this evening?
You know, I'm good, my brother. How are you? A joyous and empowering black history to all of you and to you, Alpha.
Thank you. Just same to you, dear. You know, Janice, this deal with Ronald Reagan is, you know, it's one of the just damn moments. Because,
well, I think that what's being lifted up, it is one of your alphas, just damn moments, and I join you in that. But I think that a lot of myths about who Ronald Reagan and what his legacy was is about is being lifted higher and higher.
Well, Janice, what it simply confirms to me and to those who are aware that if you can repeat a lie unchallenged over and over and over, it becomes perception, and it actually becomes fact. Well, it doesn't become fact. It becomes a reasonable facsimile of what you believe or you want everyone else to believe. So this canonization of a Ronald Reagan is just simply laughable, out and out laughable. And I posted a...
It really is. I mean, the memories that I have about the Ronald Reagan years were really, really bad. Really bad. Like, really, really bad.
Well, I posted a link for those in the chat room, and it comes off of Think Progress, and it lists the 10 things that this man did that they don't want you to know. And one of the things was he sold to terrorists. You know, and... Let's face it. If this president does half the things that Ronald Reagan did, that's what. And they're accusing him of doing more than half of that, which is not true. You know, he gave amnesty to thousands of illegal immigrants, 3 million. You know.
Well, we're going to get into that. I did read the piece that you posted, I think on yesterday or Thursday, which talks about 10 things that the Republicans don't want you to remember or to know. But I remembered every one of them as I read it, and we're going to talk about that. But give us an update, Alpha, before we get into the program. About how things are in Chicago weather-wise and if it's settling down.
Well, it's settling down. There was a great deal of pressure from, you know, the constituents in the city about the, you know, we, since 79, and I'll give you a little background history. In 1979, it snowed. It was the second largest snowfall in Chicago's history. And in that snowfall, we had a man on the fifth floor sitting in the mayor's seat named Michael Blandick. And it was, like I said, the second biggest snowfall in history since 1967. And we weren't fine-tuned when it came to snow removal. And when a reporter asked him about the difficulty the people in the city were having because of the snow and the lack of service of having the snow, you know, the streets plowed properly, this man says, "What snow?" There were over 24 inches of snow on the ground when he made this comment. People were standing at the bus stops, literally, you know, freezing because, you know, the streets just weren't plowed. And that lost this man, you know, the fifth floor, that office. So now it, you know, it's incumbent upon any mayor that when it snows, you know, they pay attention. So a couple of days
after. Well, it certainly is a measure of a mayor in Boston and the city of New York. It has become one of the measurements for whether or not a mayor is doing a good job or not. And I think it's almost a priority. I mean, the mayor of Boston, that is his number one priority in terms of managing the city, how snow is removed and how streets are cleaned and how snow emergency law enforcement is handled. And I don't think that in any major city where there's inclement weather regarding snow and people moving around, who will ever be able to escape. It's really interesting. I think in most cities that we handle snow removal as a priority in, as an electorate, much higher than education, for instance, much higher than public health operations, much higher than city-managed hospitals. And it really speaks to, you know, I remember when I came to Boston, and I do remember the storm of 79, which was awful. We were away on vacation, and I had a Fiat station wagon. And when we came back to Boston after 2 weeks being, we were actually scheduled to arrive the day after the storm. And we couldn't get back for an entire week. So we had an extra week in Florida. And when we came back a week after the storm had hit, we couldn't find my car because it was so covered in, because the snow drifts were so large. And when I also, when I first came to Boston, which was in 1966, it was nothing. Kevin White was the mayor. And there was, it was nothing to have to somehow eclipse all the snow drifts and snow on the sidewalks. The major streets were cleared, but the side streets weren't always cleared. And people made their way. I'm not getting how snow is more snow removal is more important. I know that it is a public health and safety issue, but how snow is more important than education. We want to invite all the people who are now coming into our chat room. Alpha is my co-host, and thank you for joining us at Our Common Ground, House Music Lover, and the Voxor, Rasul, and Twee, 1968. You know, I mean, right now we're having a sleet storm in Boston with loads of thunder and lightning as though it's a summer rainstorm. The lightning is really striking hard, and the thunder is very, very loud. And we live in a country where we have politicians who, for whatever political reason, simply want to ignore the fact that something is happening in has changed significantly in our weather cycles. We have never gotten this much snow in the month of January. February in Boston is generally the snow month. But we have more than 2 feet of snow on the ground right now.
Well, it's called thunder snow because we were getting lightning and thunder with the snow. And the people who deny climate change, let's leave carbon taxes and, you know, the what they want to run to, what the right and the climate change deniers want to run to and offer up as a defense, as their talking point. This is climate change. And the climate change, for those who aren't so jaded in their rhetoric, climate change is simply the moisture that is added. And, you know, they tell you that it's going to be harsher weather. Didn't it just rain like hell in Southern California? And now it's snowing like hell for the second year on the East Coast. We have experienced the two hottest years of the last 100 in the last 2 years. But they continue now because all of a sudden they want to raise the issue of, you know, the carbon tax and the carbon bubble that, you know, they have talked about. And they could be right. But at some point you cannot deny the science of climate change.
Well, you know, one of the things is that you can be stupid, but you have to be stupid in science. You can't be stupid without science. For those of you who are just joining us, thank you very much for being with us here tonight at Our Common Ground. We're going to be covering a number of issues. We have open mic tonight. Alpha is my co-host, and our number is 347-838-9852. We do want to share with you a bit of resistance, what I call resistance history, looking at some of the voices of the resistance movement. Some of you know it as Black Power Movement. And we also want to do some talking about Black History Month and how you view it, what you do with it, what you think of it. So, Alpha, let's get started. Thank you very much for those of you who are listening and would like to join us in our chat room. We have a very robust participation in our chat room. You can come to blogtalkradio.com/OCG.
These are our songs of joy and sadness. They were given life by slaves who toiled in the fields of America, sweat on their brows, hope in their hearts. These are our songs of happiness and sorrow. The soul of black folk, coupled with religious fervor and vigorous rhythms that hint of their African heritage, these are our songs of hope. Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven shall ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Every voice and sing. The road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers died. Lift every voice and sing.
Tonight, at Our Common Ground, we take time to pay tribute to those warriors, resistors, and builders who brought us thus far on our way.
Carter G. Woodson, the son of former slaves, was born December 19, 1875 in Buckingham County, Virginia. Because of his poverty, he taught himself at home until the age of 17. Regardless, he later went on to receive a Ph.D. in history from Harvard University in 1912. Woodson reached out to the community through the establishment of several key organizations and founded Negro History Week, the precursor to Black History Month. He also wrote 18 books on the history of African Americans and their lack of educational equality, including The Miseducation of the Negro in 1933.
Your name is Toby. You're going to learn to say your name. Let me hear you say it. What's your name?
Kunta. Kunta Kinte.
When the master gives you something, you take it. He gave you a name. It's a nice name. It's Toby. And it's going to be yours till the day you die. Now, I know you understand me. And I want to hear it. Again! I want to hear you say your name. Your name is Toby. What's your name?
Kunta.
Lord God, help that boy. They're gonna whip him dead.
What's your name? Say it. Toby. Who are you? Say your name. What's your name?
Toby.
Hi. Say it again. Say it louder so they all can hear you. What's your name?
Toby. My name is Toby.
Hi.
What language did you speak then? What was your name? It couldn't have been Smith or Jones or Bunch or Powell. That wasn't your name. They don't have those kind of names where you and I came from. No, what was your name? And why don't you now know what your name was then? Where did it go? Where did you lose it? Who took it? And how did he take it? What tongue did you speak? How did the man take your tongue? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
And empowering Black History Month. But I wonder if we take for granted our history. I wonder if we understand what role our history plays or should play in our lives. When I listen to the Negro National Anthem and I choose not to change the name of the man's song, and and the words "stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers sighed." And I look at all of the problems that we face in our community. I look at the lack of resistance and warriorship and leadership on issues that are important to our survival in this country. And I think of these words, and it is worthy to weep.
Well, Janice,
and I wonder if we take our history, if we embrace our history, if we know our history. I mean, every time I read a book about either a black biography or black scholarly work, I'm thinking about the history from which the concepts, the words, the acts, the behavior comes.
Well, Janice, I think what we face as a people is that constant shrinking of those who are aware of our history and those who really take it seriously. We can speak about it at my age because, you know, we embrace it. But that said, the young people simply don't give it that priority, that level of importance. They don't.
You know, Alpo, we can lay it at the feet of young people. And they don't because we didn't. We have not taken, you know, a good example is that in the state of Arizona, African American studies can no longer be taught at the college level. And it probably wasn't ever being taught at the public schools. We look at the quality and the quantity of black history in our public schools. We look at it, the quantity and the quality of the black history, the limited black history that's taught in our community centers and our churches, and the way in which it's done is not helpful because, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think we can't keep saying, well, our young people don't think it's important. We have to make it important. I mean, if our children were being taught this rich, deep history in the context of their lives and their parents and their community issues, they would take an interest. That's my premise. And we want to hear from you. Our number is 347-838-9852 because I think black history is the underground. I mean, if you listen to that clip, and, you know, I think that one of the most vivid parts of the series, The Roots, had to do with how we got changed, how our humanity was stripped from us. And I've got a clip of an ex-slave who's talking about what slavery was like. And I've got another clip because I think we have things that we don't take advantage of. One of them is the slave burial ground in New York City. We'll take our kids to Disney World, but we won't take our kids to something like that on vacation. And that's why, and I think you are right, that's why our children don't take it seriously. They murmur about Martin Luther King and people that you always hear about, Madam C.J. Walker, who, by the way, I just finished reading one of the biographical novels about her that was very interesting. We hear about Booker T. Washington. We hear a little about Carter G. Woodson, and maybe some W.E.B. Du Bois, and we think that that is history. But there, history has components. History has a root component. It has a past component, and it has a contemporary component. And inside our history, there are many movements. And our children don't know anything about it. We've got a caller. Our number for you who would like to join us in talking about Black history, 347-838-9852. And again, tonight at Our Common Ground, we're kind of focusing on some movement voices, but we're also focusing on James Weldon Johnson and Rosamond Johnson's song, The Negro National Anthem. And I think we do have to give some thought to why that was written and to the message in it. Alpha, you want to take this call? 954? You're nice. On the air. I respect you. Thanks for being with us.
Good evening, Dena Walu, Sister Janice, and Brother Sensei. This is Arande.
Arande, my brother.
Arande.
And I want to chime. Yes, this is from the Ethiopian language, Amharic. And when Roots came out and Star Wars at the same time, 1977, I was living in West New York, New Jersey. And I'd been 2 years out of the Army at that time. And after Roots, we went in Manhattan to go see Star Wars on East 86th Street. But that's not the importance of this conversation. The importance of this conversation is that, Janice, have you ever gone to Ethiopia or Ghana, any of them?
Yes, places? I have.
Yes,
yes I
did
have.
Did you go to Addis Ababa?
Yes, well, I did.
Yes, ma'am. 3 years ago. I just left there about 15 days ago. I'm on my way back. And they got a community there. And to see these people, poverty is sad and depressing anywhere on this earth. But the point I really want to drive home here is that when we start talking about the educational system and with our children, what we perceive that they're not getting, no, they're getting it. Calvin Butts went over there when I was there 3 years ago when they had the 2000 millennium celebration over there. I just missed him by a day, basically. And I remember Calvin Buss from the Abyssinian, you know, Baptist Church in Harlem. That's originally where I'm from New York City. The thing is that I wanted to bring up what was brought up early in Alpha Show today, the last caller.
But we're talking about Black history, Arande.
No. I want to keep it to that. I definitely want to keep it to this, you know, about our Black history. You know, if the ones who have come before us, and when Malala, when Kwanzaa was happening, I was in JFK just this past December with the snowstorm situation. And I listened to what Dr. Malala Karanga, who I've met personally in Los Angeles. I was living out there before and during the Rodney King riots, you know. And him and I actually sat down and rapped and talked with each other about the history. And I remember when I was in JFK back in this past December of 29, 30, before I went back over to Ethiopia, that how he was basically dissatisfied with the Kwanzaa celebration of folks just kind of went and lay down and went to sleep and just think that it's about having costumes and singing and dancing, and he equated that to the Million Man March. But also, I want to address the issue with you guys, man, if you will let me, please. that we need to start defining what capitalism and entrepreneurial business mentality, yes, the mindset in this country is, and because this deals with Black history. You know, the one brother that left Alpha's show today, he talked about how Blacks aren't doing this and not sticking up. He made a couple of valid points, but and in its entirety, sister, no, we've had made many points, and we have gotten to this point to where we are right now, where it reflects on our history and what our realities are in this country. When you're in another country, and it's your own skin that's dealing you this evil and this harmony, that's one thing. But while you're over here on this side of the soil, and white folks, you know, the brother said something that really hit home with me, and I can deal with it because I was dealing with the United Nations and the UNICEF bullshit over there, you know, in Africa. And I'm saying, well, if this is about the people and taking care and feeding folks, and this is tying into Black history, you know, when we come talking about our businesses, and Dr. Dees mentioned something about Arabs, and I said, man, listen, they're Arabs, Muslims, and other people, entities that got businesses started in this country that this government has trying to wipe them out, and they've hired more Americans here for their little, and it's shallow compared to what an American or European would make in their damn country. And I'm telling you something for fact. And they're trying to get rid of it and dislink these people over here in this country.
Okay, let me ask you something because you're going way off track from what we're trying to do.
Well, I'm trying. I'm sorry.
And I understand exactly what you're saying. And
okay,
it's certainly another show. And, you know, Ari Marazan, a brother from Philadelphia who runs the Heru Institute, had a very, very important show. He has a blog talk radio show called Blackonomics. And mm-hmm, he was talking exactly about what you're talking about. But one of the things I want to talk about tonight is the whole concept of history as something that changes us.
Well, can I ask you this?
You know, our
how do we tie in Black history with entrepreneurial and capitalism? How do we tie that into our reality? And how does that reflect us? And how is that a reality of us? And I'm not talking about folks selling beads and trinkets on the street, man. I'm talking about real capitalism.
Well, it ties in because one of the things that we have failed to do in teaching history is a concept of changing. It is a concept of how a people transforms, how a people transforms out of a system like chattel slavery into a system of transforming and meeting the needs of its own people. We have many, many needs. One of them is education. One of them is housing. Another of them is good and healthy foods. So,
but you know what? Nobody seems to want to deal with the reality of actually what Garvey tried to teach us, and even what Elijah Muhammad up until Minister Farrakhan, and even our own business folks that we respect, whether it's been Johnson or Graves from Black Enterprise, what they've been trying
to
show us, and sister, I know you know the deal, because even when I talked to Flo Kennedy, the couple of times I talked to her during the Howard Beach riots back in Queens, back then, you know what was being passed on. And sister, you know, I'm 58 years old, so, you know, I'm trying to, I'm not trying to degrade what you're doing or disrespect what you're doing.
No, and I'm not
going to
let you change what I'm doing. What I'm
no one's
going to
change that, but the thing
instance,
is that we got to be more universal than five boroughs in the 50 states of this country.
Let's talk
That's
about,
what it comes
let's
down
talk
to.
About Let's talk about the black farmers in...
Yes, ma'am.
...in the context of our history.
All right.
The black farmers that we sat, that we did nothing for almost 15 years, most of them were dead by the time the U.S. government settled the Pigsford case.
When you
and if
say,
we don't understand how those farmers came to be, then we don't understand how farming changed our situation. We farmed for ourselves, for our communities. It was a form of economic development and entrepreneurship in our own communities, and we let it go when they started letting us go into the grocery store. Even
when you say
South.
That, that's called integration. When you say that, we let it go. No, I meant my grandfather, my grandmother, Rexall, when you talk about the grocery stores, I'm going back as far as I can recollect on this. Now, my people
are
You're
not getting
from,
me. I'm talking about the farmers.
I'm going to get, address
people,
them.
Black
I'm trying
people
to address
who
them.
Had independent farms, pineapple farms, vegetable farms. I'm talking about huge farms. I'm not talking about some little garden bed in the back of the house.
I remember a brother down in North Carolina called Warner Wheeler who owned a bank down there, man. He also was one of the first black pioneers to open and have a 135 FAR corporate aviation outfit out of Raleigh, Durham. I understand what he did with the farming industry down there and as well as the Tuskegee people in Alabama. You know, I'm aware of this. And I'm sure there are a lot of other people that are aware of the situation with the farmers.
You know,
and what President
we
Obama
understand.
Just passed. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, we have to understand that if we don't know the history of that, then we can't claim it. If our children don't know the possibilities of what farming is, especially in the South and the Midwestern areas, then they can never claim it.
Well, you know, the sad part is this with sisters, that farming with this fast food chain, unless you have some kind of real estate where you can actually do that, you might have brothers like Dr. Doc, you know, in Oklahoma that can do this, or some people that's got real estate where they can patch off a section where they can feed themselves. I understand why these farmers, not just black farmers, but white farmers, I'm not embracing the majority of white people because what the one brother did bring up to a point, this is dealing with the black history, is that they won't target the certain particular white folks, and when you deal with black people, who are in their own country or even Asian people or other Caucasians, but let's just deal with America for this sake, right? Skin color, the complexion connection is a reality. So now when you get these farmers who are black that has been dislinked, you know, and President Obama did do something and got them paid finally, you know, I'm very proud and happy of that. So if you and I, if we can afford to find some kind of real estate where we can farm and grow our own tomatoes and whatever you want to do in North America, we're lucky. But at the same time, how are you going to feed yourselves when this mass food production chain and this fast food production chain is prevalent to what we think we need to do as living? Our medicine situation is bad. When our folks used to teach us how to go to the plants and get the roots, and Jethro Klaus made a fortune off of Back to Eden, you know, when it came to healing people.
How do you suppose that we use our history as a tool for resistance and building?
We've had that history explained to us I don't know how many times. We are the most hard-headed, I'll say that. I won't agree with people that come on the air and talk about we don't support each other, because that's head-in-the-sand nonsense. Obviously, we had to support each other with or without white people in America, you know, to even have this kind of discussion. I'm sorry if I'm being loud and disrespectful. I don't mean to be that way. But obviously, we overlook our own greatness in this country. We've had enough examples to show us what time it is. There's no more excuse.
Well,
in this modern day and age, it is a problem where that if we are so bogged down, how the hell will we get out of slavery and get to this point? That blows my mind sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it blows my mind too.
You know,
we
know what time it is. The examples are there. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, my brother, for calling. Alpha, you see, one of the things is that I'm not sure if, in fact, we see history as a tool.
Well, Dennis, and to be honest, very, very few of us, even in our generation, a generation of rebellion, of black power, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, this was it swept us because we had one thing in common. Today, many of us don't have that same goal in common. And this is what, you know, you talk about, my mom didn't, you know, start out taking, you know, my brother and I to black history museums and forums, and she really never even spoke of it. So as we grow up, we either choose that path, and I'm simply saying many of our youth, as well as their parents, that generation before them, did not choose the path of remembering our history. So if the elders don't remember our history, then the next generation won't either.
Well, you know, that's why I think that we ought to be very, very concerned about the lack of black history in our schools. And we have from even the late 60s to the early 70s, I bet that listening to us, there are less than 3% of the people in our audience tonight really understand the Pinkford suit against the United States of America, which is the black farmer's suit. Very few could tell you the details of that. Very few can tell you the details of Plessy versus Ferguson and the ways in which black Americans organized against that decision. I mean, there were people like W.E.B. Du Bois, James Weldon Johnson, Rosamond Johnson, Madam C.J. Walker, Ida B. Wells, all of those people protested in front of the White House in regard to Plessy versus Ferguson. And how many of you can tell me what Plessy versus Ferguson was or what Brown versus Board of Education was about? How many of us can really explain why in 2010, it's 2010. Last week, a federal judge questioned whether a key component of the landmark Voting Rights Act is outdated from the bench. And he expressed skepticism about using evidence of racial discrimination to justify continued election monitoring for a group of mostly southern states. This was U.S. District Judge John Bates. And it came during oral arguments in an Alabama County lawsuit targeting the law, a constitutional challenge that a number of legal observers predict it could go to the Supreme Court, which will take us to one of our other topics for tonight. Bates posed sharp questions to the legal teams on both sides, and he appeared sympathetic to the county's argument. The Justice Department attorneys, supported by lawyers and several civil rights groups, and my friend and Our Common Ground guest, Barbara Arnwine, was present. And they responded that Congress extended the law with overwhelming majorities based on evidence that racial discrimination continues even today. And this judge was challenging it.
Okay.
So I think we've, you know, I think that we don't study black history. We say
absolutely
we
not. Absolutely not. You're absolutely right about that.
You listen to that clip in Roots. That is how our names were taken. And how many years later, Malcolm was talking about the same thing, who gave you your name. And he wasn't talking about your name like Smith or Alfred or Pete Graham or whatever. He was talking about your name in the context of your character and who you are as a black person.
Well, Janice,
that's
you
what
have,
he was talking about.
Well, I understand what I understand your point, and your point is absolutely correct. But when you get to a point where we are now, just as they are coming for abortion to dismantle it, just as they're coming for each and every, the New Deal they're coming for, they've been coming for our history for hundreds of years to dismantle it, and they have successfully erased it from the minds by simply vilifying the study and the nationalism that each black American should have. They don't stop. They come for abortion. They come for everything that they disagree with in a organized, paid-for, concerted effort. And this is where we fall short in our politics. Politics will rule the day. We can speak about pride and knowing our heritage, but as they whittle away at it, chip away at it, bit by bit, just as this judge found the courage to stand up while he is on the bench, this is what we face with
a
vacuum, a lack of pushback. They should be all, and everybody, and I got to say this, everybody always wants to look at the shortcomings of this pushback and shine that light on people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. But where was Jesse? Where was Al Sharpton? Where were the people in that local community and the outrage that they should have raised, even about his statements? You know, when white judges make decisions that white folks don't like civil unions and gay marriage. In Iowa, they organized and they voted those judges out. Do I dare say we don't have that capacity to organize and vote judges out who render these arcane decisions, these draconian decisions? We even raise the issues of discrimination. We don't do it. And we don't do it because we are too busy trying to survive. We are too busy on a day-to-day rut. And for some reason...
Well, one of the things about history is history shows us how transformation has happened. Alpha, we're going to go for a break, and our number is 347-838-9852. We're talking about black history. How important is it to you? How do you use it as a tool? Why don't we have black history that is effective in all the way down to elementary school up to high school? Why don't we have community centers that are teaching black history on a daily basis? That's my question. I'd like to hear from you. And
yourself, if you were white, Why would you want to be a cop in a black ghetto today when you know they're looking for you? Why, if you weren't sick in the mind and felt you were so superior that you had the right to rule them, why would you want a lousy $5,000 a year job when you're white and you can make it in this society? Why would you want the job as a cop if you weren't sick? Tell me, would you want to be in their community if they were ready to offer you for $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a year? We have to understand the politics of those hunkies in our community. They are there to patrol and to control. That is all. We are going to do the patrolling. We are going to do the controlling. We are building a concept of peoplehood. We do not care about hunkies. But if in building that concept of peoplehood, the hunkies get in our way, they got to go. There is no question about it. There is no question about it. There's no question about it. We are not concerned with their way of life. We are concerned with our people. We want to give our people the dignity and the humanity that we know as our people. And if they get in our way, they're going to be off. They're going to be off.
Incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Say it loud! Say it loud! Say it loud! Say it loud!
Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, inviting you to join us also at TruthWorks on Tuesday night, A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah Napier. On Wednesday night, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles. And on Saturday, It's Just Damn Radio, The Alpha Show at 3 p.m., all Eastern Time. It's the Black Truth of the Event.
My name is Fountain Hughes. I was born in Charlottesville, Virginia, and now I am 101 years old.
I belong to Buenos when I was a slave. We didn't know nothing. Didn't like to look at no book. Now, in my boy days, boys lived quite different than the way they live now. Oh, you wore dress like a woman till I was, I'd be 10, 12, 13 years old. You'd be barefooted, cold. That didn't make no difference. He wasn't no more than a dog, some of them. Jail sentence. It just seemed as we were in jail. Now, I couldn't go from here across the street. Well, I couldn't go to nobody's house without I have a note or something from my master. But I couldn't just walk away like the people does now, you know. We were slaves. We belonged to people. They sell us like they sell horses and cows and hogs and all like that. Have an auction bench and they put you on up on the bench and bid on you the same as you're bidding on cattle, you know. If I thought that I'd ever be a slave again, I'd take a gun and just end it all right away. Because you're nothing but a dog. Well, I don't know how. I don't know, tell you the truth. When I think of it today, I don't know how I'm living.
He says he doesn't know how he's living, Alpha. That was one of the slave narratives of a man who was freed, and we had audio technology in order to capture his voice. But I am more and more concerned about the way in which we lack honor in using our history as a tool, as a way of raising up, as Marcus Garvey would say, ye mighty people. Alpha, and our number is 347-838-9852. We'll keep this subject open if you'd like to talk about it. I think that we need to get real busy. We need to, you know, we keep talking about we need to make our children read more. We need to read more with them. And I think that you cannot say that the only way in which we can utilize our survival is in economic survival. If we are spiritually dying, if we have generations of children who have adopted principles which do not incorporate their history. I mean, I don't know any other people in this country, and I have had social, close social relationships and colleagues of all ethnicities and races. And I don't know, and by the way, race is a U.S. construct. I don't know any people who give up their children into the world outside a framework of history. I recently had an experience with one of my neighbor's children. She's a sophomore in college, and she was home for Greek something. They're Greek. And they celebrate the history of their people, not only the history of how they came to be in their immigrant history, but their history in the old country. Italians do it, Armenians do it, certainly. People of Jewish extract do it. And our children very rarely get an understanding of how our churches came to be, how the church played a role in the building of America and black communities and what it meant to have churches. I mean, I throw out the name like Jerina Lee. And people don't know who you're talking about. And Jerina Lee was an ex-slave who was one of the first, the third bishop in the African American Methodist Episcopal Church. And there are very few Baptist children, black children, who know the history of the AME Church, and very few black children who are AME who know the history of the Baptist Church. It's beyond belief how we have given up our name, because our history is our name, which is why I had to play that clip from Roots. Our history is our name. Because if we taught our children about what happened during slavery and post-slavery and Jim Crow, they would want to know more about our African history. And we cannot find alone, you know, this whole process, Alpha, of people going to Ancestry.com and looking up there where they came from and doing the DNA, all of that is good and well. But if we don't look in our own communities, I mean, I look at the Boston Black community. William Trotter, Frederick Douglass, Malcolm X, all were huge parts of this Black community. The Black abolitionist movement began right here in Boston. The homes of I went to Frederick Douglass's home in New Bedford, Massachusetts once. And you could see how Frederick Douglass was trying to claim his dignity, just in the things he had in his dining room and things, you know, they had actual artifacts. The other thing is that when we know the importance and hold the importance of history, it seems to me then we would better understand what is happening in Egypt, the whole idea of why the Mubarak people would go into the museum for ancient treasures and destroy them, or when this country invaded Iraq, why the first things we hit, along with the government buildings in the first 2 days, were the museums and the ancient treasures to destroy them. Because if you know history, you understand that is how we get erased. You think those Egyptians want to keep the history of we were there, we were Nubians in Egypt before the Arabs ever came? So we have to, I mean, people who are listening to us, I hope that you are looking around and you're asking the question, what is my local school board doing about Black history? What am I doing about my children? Am I just teaching them about Martin Luther King? And who else is it, Alpha, that we tend to throw up on Black History Month?
Well, we got Ray Ray, we got Pookie. We seem to...
We start to throw in Beyonce as Black history.
Exactly.
Michael Jackson was a musical genius, and in contemporary history, he was a musical genius. And yes, about the music, he should be mentioned, but he is not Black history in the sense of what history is supposed to mean. Michael Jackson transformed himself. He transformed American music. Did he transform anything else? And you all know, anybody in this audience knows how much I love Michael Jackson's music. So who's making history today? Firsts are not history makers. Am I on the right track here?
Well,
I'm wondering if I'm on the right track.
Well, it's not.
Our number is 347-838-9852. And if you'd like to argue the point, as Alpha would say, say it, Alpha. I'd love to hear you say it.
Have at it. Just have at it. You know,
405 is on the air, on the line. Thank you, 405. I respect you.
Yes. Excuse me. Good evening, everyone.
Oh, my brother.
Good evening, Don. Doc Don, thank you for your call.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me that we're supposed to learn from our history. Excuse me. Correct?
Yeah, that's one thing.
Learn from it. We're going to repeat history. And our history is not one that we really want to repeat, in my estimation. We've got some courageous ancestors who came before us and fought this system of repression. But to me, I can't separate the white supremacy from this discussion, because here's how it affects us. All of this propaganda machine. See, we don't have the close-knit families like we used to have. Back in the 60s, we lived in the same neighborhoods because we couldn't go across 4th Street or 8th Street. We were confined to a certain geographical area. And so we had close-knit families. We had our own businesses, and we did well among each other. We had Wall Street. We had Tulsa, Oklahoma. We had Rosewood. We had good, viable families. We knew grandpa, grandma. We knew aunts, uncles, cousins. And we were more closer to discrimination, overt discrimination. We couldn't go in grocery stores. We couldn't go in cat's stores. We couldn't go down to Woolworths. We couldn't go into certain schools. We had to stay on a certain side of town. And that was just back in the 60s, okay? So we came up with a little rebel in us, and we took to the streets, and we made a difference. We had organizations like the Panthers. We had groups that were downright rebellious. We also had the pacifists, like the NAACP, other organizations.
Let me just interject here, Don, that with all of that, there, as you pointed out when you first started, when you first came on the air, you said that history is to be learned from. In all that you have said, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, the Black Power Movement, the Black Panthers, there are lessons that we need right now. For instance, one of the strategies that we need to have is to reintegrate ourselves with each other. When you were talking about you couldn't go out of the neighborhood, da-da-da-da, you know what I was thinking about when you said that?
What?
When I was a kid, there were three grocery stores owned by three different black families in the community that I grew up with.
Yes.
In our community, you were committing kind of treason if you didn't shop at those grocery stores. And I'm talking about grocery stores with grocery carts. I'm not talking about a corner store. I didn't know anything about going to Woolworths, because we had two very large drugstores with pharmacies and post office in my community, the community I grew up in. So there wasn't any yearning. And my mother was a big, big Spiegel catalog buyer, so that you didn't have to suffer any of the indignities of Jim Crow to go downtown to go to a department store. I think those are lessons.
Yes. They are lessons. However, you know, what we're dealing with today is entirely different. It's different. Not the system of white supremacy. It's not different. It's more sophisticated. However, the generations have evolved, and they are different. They're not as close to the overt problems that we had to go through, and therefore they're subject to this vast news media and television and movies and the propaganda that's been which have conditioned them. In the same manner, so let's go back and sit and look what Hitler did when he was used his propaganda and the mistreatment of the Jewish people, and his chief, his tactics that he used. He manufactured his lies and news items, negative imageries, to where the Jewish people were sacrificed, and so. Today, what's happening to us? All we do when we turn on this television, when we see these fools spending, throwing millions of dollars in some away in some strip joint, and we see the imageries on television of us that are deliberately, I believe, designed to do what? Ask ourselves, is it designed to produce prejudice and distort our image? Is it designed to insensitize?
Let me ask you.
Is it designed to make others insensitive of our plight?
If we had
a tranquilizer out there to the world, so that we're afraid almost to even criticize white racism in this country, and it's almost impossible to do.
Well, that's why my question I'm posing. Suppose that we had models of leadership that was similar to that of Stokely Carmichael, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, W.E.B. Du Bois, Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, because they were not afraid to take on the system.
Yes, I totally agree. However, you know, with the environment that we have today, who's willing to so-called be in that role when we know the outcome and what happens to individuals who even try to speak anything about the unfairness and the mistreatment of people in this country who are melanated? And especially black folks who are at the bottom of the ladder. We're at the bottom of the economic ladder. Now, who's gonna do that for us beside ourselves? I think it's time that we've take the responsibility and look at what happened to us, and look at this social engineering that's taking place among us by this totally dominant white news media. That's putting all of this bad, negative imagery of us out around the world, and we're buying into it. Some of these entertainers, athletes, and everybody else is acting a fool out there. And so I think it's going to boil down to we can't be looking for any leadership. Now, who's going to take the place of these oldsters up there that's getting old, like the Sharptons and the Jacksons and all these people when they die?
You know, one of the things, the reason I wanted to talk about black history is that look what happened when we started teaching our children about Malcolm X. In the 80s, the young generation, the youth, were very excited about Malcolm X and what he stood for and what he did. We let that die. Imagine if our children really understood what and how the Black Panther, the Black Power movement began. If they really understood, because in my mind, Don, there really isn't any difference between what's happening now and what was happening in 1960.
No, it's not. I totally agree with
you. The propaganda then was the same.
That's right. We're suffering the same injustices. We're suffering. We're being put in prisons at a disproportionate rate. which is a business now. We have ineffective social programs that are out there because they're not funded, and now you've got people who are in government that wants to take away all the, no, we don't have any money for the social programs and things, the educational opportunities that we need in order to bring the masses of our people up educationally and economically.
Mm-hmm.
And then they allow the immigration problems to come in to where they're busted. They have busted the budget of the states because we're competing for the same dollar bill there. So no, nothing's changed. And so what I'm saying is
that was my point to Aronde, is that what our history teaches us is that we have responsibility for our people, and
that's
that when we start reaching down to address the issues of our people. If you look at the black, I do have a feature that I'm going to run because I think it's very important. The Black Panther Party was about education and health and food for black children who were poor.
That's correct. Out there in Oakland, California, I was out there. My family lives in Oakland. But the thing is, I want you to play this feature. I'm gonna get off of the air and listen to you. But I think the leadership is just like Black Ice is saying: the leader is in the mirror.
That's right.
To do it.
Absolutely.
We're
the
ones
leader that
have
you have been looking for.
Yeah, you better believe
Don, let me ask you
a question.
I do want to ask every caller, and I forgot to ask Aronde because Aronde was going taking me to Ethiopia. And to the airport, I love him to death. He was taking me everywhere. He was talking to Karinga, and he was talking.
Yeah, that's man. Yeah,
If there was one black history book that you would recommend for everybody to read, what would it be?
Carter G. Woodson, The Miseducation of the Negro.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'm
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks, Don. Have a good weekend.
I think we
ought to be outraged about the lack of education around the movements and the people that have caused us to come out of slavery and back in, because I think the prison system is another form of slavery. I mean, look at Carmichael. Carmichael was talking about, that's a 1965 clip, and he was talking about police brutality then. We're still the subject and victims of police brutality. Look what happened in Houston just last week. A criminal gave up, laid on the ground, with his hands behind his back to be handcuffed and arrested, and eight police officers brutally kicked and beat him. And that's how it goes. Alpha, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I don't remember now.
Well, let's go to 773 in Chicago. 773, you're on the air. I respect you. Alpha, take this call.
Hey, what's up, Dennis? Alpha, this is Alf.
How's music lover? Good to have you with us tonight.
Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment and have one quick question. I was listening to the radio this past week, heard Dick Gregory.
You're always listening to the radio, and you can never be on a radio call without mention. I didn't hear you mentioning you call Our Common Ground on that radio show you was calling into.
You know what? That's funny. I thought about that.
Ass right off of there.
I don't mention your shows, but I am going to start doing that because I do mention those other shows on you guys' shows. So that's a really good point.
I know.
That's a good point. But I heard Dick Gregory, and he said this before, but it rang really true to me when I heard it. This time, he said King died mostly because he ascended to a position of power that he was able to set policy. And that's what really got everybody's, hair standing up. And that's why he had to die. And And I'm just wondering, you asked who's making black history now. Is Obama making black history?
Well, it's a very complex question that you pose.
Well, I think there's a clear-cut answer. Absolutely he is. Now, whether he's making the black history that a lot of people would hope that he makes is one thing, but absolutely he's making black history. Now, when you put it in context and you know, he ain't doing this for black folks, he ain't doing that for black folks, one man is not going to pull an entire race, an entire culture up from the doldrums. This is not a one-man thing. As he's already said, you got to help me with this. We are a heavy lift as we move forward. And unless we help us to help us, where are we here? We can talk about our lack of history. We can speak about our lack of whatever. But when we have a lack of right now, the politics that shape and affect our lives, then we can't succeed without that acknowledgement. And that has been my point and I look at Janice as someone who continues to beat that drum of our history. And she's absolutely correct. That is an intricate part of who we are. We must understand and must embrace our history. We debate our history. White folks embrace theirs. And just as, we say, what happened, the Black Panther Party. Janice, you said what they stood for. And I say that they were villainized, vilified by the white supremacist structure of this nation because of the same reason that Dr. Martin Luther King had to die. They were able to affect policy. They were able to influence
people. But one of the things that people need to understand, too, Alpha, is that the people who organized the Black Panther Party, and I was in the party for a little over 3 or 4 years, and it was simple things. But the people who were involved in putting together the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party were all students, and they were all very bright people, very smart, well-read. They had read the works of Marx and Lenin and other movements, international movements for freedom and justice. They understood the concepts. So they were able to put together something and translate. I cannot tell you how brilliant H. Rat Brown and Huey Newton and Angela Davis and others were in the party. I would only hope to be a little bit as brilliant as they were. And that is why, you look at Kwame Ture, who was known as Stokely Carmichael at the time. Stokely Carmichael was so mesmerizing because he was so brilliant. He understood the plight and related to where black people were. To the point when I was 14 years old, I really seriously contemplated running away from home and joining Stokely Carmichael in Mississippi. I asked permission and my parents said no. But I really was thinking about in my little crazy 14-year-old head, because keep in mind I was a junior in high school at 14, I was really trying to figure out how I would be able to survive my parents and my family if I ran away for Stokely Carmichael. All the kids in my family, we were talking about it. My cousin Henry Henry was a freshman at Howard University. He left and went to Mississippi, and nobody heard from him for years to join Stokely Carmichael in the Black Power movement. So, and that is because we knew the history. We understood that there was a difference between people who were going to transform our people and people who did things like Louis Latimer and inventors. That was one kind of black history. But there was another kind of black history, and that was the urge to make black history. I mean, I often go into the law schools and the business schools around Boston and talk to black student organizations, and you look at the ambition of black kids going into law school and business school today, and you look at my generation. I knew I went to business school and I knew I went to law school, and it was about justice and freedom and making not a history note, but transforming the conditions and the status of black people in this country, raising the bar of justice. And you know why? Because we had people who taught us the history, who taught us that we had a place, and we have generations of children who don't. Now, going back to Barack Obama, Barack Obama has made history in a lot of different ways, and I don't minimize any achievement. To be the first African-American president, to run the kind of campaign, to deliver the kind of message of change and hope and making people really think about transformation for this country, that is history. Is he going to make black history? If he lets these fools go into Congress and change all of the domestic policies that we've worked so hard to achieve and put into place, he'll make history. It won't be good history.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but there are many ways in which history is placed, and we have to put all of our thoughts and concepts conceptually context it in that history.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The way you put it.
We minimize CJ. I just finished reading The Black Rose, which is a biographical novel about Madam CJ Walker. And her concept was about washerwomen, putting her business in place so that washerwomen had options other than washing white people's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people really put her history in that context. Very few people understand that at a time when $1,000 was a lot of money, she made a $1,000 donation to every black school, Tuskegee, Talladega, Spelman, Morehouse, $1,000. And then before she died, about 5 years before she died, she gave all of her money to black organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit around and we think about, well, she was the one that wanted to straighten black people's hair. She didn't name her comb a straightening comb. She named her comb a smoothing comb. But history is a tool. And so I think that in the context of your question about President Obama, of course he has made history. He has made a very unique kind of history.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not, I mean, the strategies of the Black Power movement, the strategies of the Civil Rights movement, they're transformative. They're transformative strategies that we can use forever. we can use in the context of these folks calling us out. If we can change our minds and our spirits and our thinking about who we are. You know, we go to church every Sunday and we talk about money doesn't make us, but we live our lives Monday through Friday as though it does. I can't take time off from work to go to that meeting. I can't take time off from work to go to a school board meeting to ask them what the hell are they doing about illiteracy in the local schools, what are they doing about Black history in the local schools to lure Black children to stay in school, what are they doing about the dignity of Black children. I can't speak out because I'll lose my job, I'll lose my house, I'll lose my car. In Black history, there were people who lost everything, and there were Black people who had nothing. I mean, I look at the concept of the Caribbean Susu. Are you familiar with that house music?
Yep. Everybody contributed Susu? X amount of money for 12 months. Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't have to. You make up the rules. You don't. It's not 12 months or 18 months. You can do it however you
right.
want to do it.
Right. You can set it up how you want to set it up, right.
Those are strategies for survival.
Mm-hmm.
But we would rather go to the Bank of America, put our money in it. They never give us a loan. They never give us a mortgage. And when they give us a mortgage, it's a bad mortgage. And when we know anything, we're in foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
But we have Black banks. I bank in a Black bank in Chicago because it's a Black bank. It's a viable Black bank. They're not going to lose my money to FDIC the same way as my credit union. I bank in a Black credit union.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have, you know, and that comes from my understanding of how Black people survived. House Music, thank you for your call.
Well,
a very complex question.
Yeah, if I can real quick.
Yeah.
The purpose of even asking that question was to kind of address somebody called Alpha today and mentioned how Tavis was out of line and how anybody's out of line basically for implying that the president should instill some kind of Black agenda, which, you know, just irked me. And asking the first question that I did, saying that Martin Luther King was a threat because he ascended to a position where he can set policy, that's why he had to be assassinated. Well, you have a Black man who's president at the highest office in the world, basically, who can set that policy, but he won't or can't. So therefore, he's in a position where he can make this quote-unquote Black history, but once again, he won't or he can't or will not for whatever reason. And it's all one big question. It's not. It wasn't ever meant to be a linear question. It works on so many levels. And also, if you want to know the book,
it is very complex.
Yeah, and if you want to know the book, Carter G. Woodson, of course, is a great pick. But I throw ISIS papers in there also.
Okay, the ISIS papers and the miseducation of by Carter G. Woodson.
Mm-hmm.
The ISIS papers by Dr. Frances Gretz Welsing.
Yeah,
I'll have to give her a call and have her come on soon. The other is a very interesting book. We were supposed to have the author, and I screwed up. He called me. I didn't call him back because I didn't get the message until yesterday, and I was too embarrassed to call him back yesterday. But it's Black People in the White House by Clarence Luzane, The History of Black People in the White House by Clarence Luzane. Did you know that the cook at the White House during the Roosevelt years used to sell pies out the window?
No.
I love it.
No.
I love it. Thank you, House Music Lover, and you have a good weekend. Good
Thanks
Super Bowl
too.
Weekend to you.
All right, go Pittsburgh.
We're going to go to our feature, Alpha, because I think it's important in the context of even thinking about the revisionist history that's going on with Ronald Reagan. Let me just say this. Clarence Thomas is a Black History note. He is not Black History.
The whites cut out. They flee to the suburbs. And the community that you thought you were integrating soon becomes another all-Black slum, another all-Black ghetto.
It might have been whipped up by militant, anti-white Black Muslims. It might have been poverty.
That we should control the politics and the politicians in the community where we live. We should control the businesses and create employment opportunities for ourselves. And the social philosophy of Black nationalism only means that we should do something to uplift the standard and the level of our own society and put it on par with others.
We want Black power.
How can you tell Black people to be nonviolent and at the same time condone the sending of white killers into the Black community? It's something wrong. We are going to control our communities by any means necessary.
That's all we've been doing, begging. It's time to stand up and take over.
The government is responsible for the injustice.
We built the country up, we'll burn it down.
We don't advocate violence, but our people have been the constant victims of brutality on the part of America's racists, and the government has found itself either unwilling or unable to do anything about it.
We've got to build so much strength in building our community that if they come to get one person, they're going to have to mess with us all. That's what we got to do. That's what we got to do.
I say violence is necessary. Violence is a part of America's culture. It is as American as cherry pie.
Black Panther Party calls for freedom.
What is freedom?
Freedom is Black power.
What is Black power?
Black power is not just a mere slogan.
Black Panther Party calls for full employment for all our people. Black Panther Party calls for an end to the capitalist exploitation of our community.
We've got to build common strength inside our community.
So that when LBJ says, come here, boy, to my war, we say, hell no, we ain't.
And we're one night, let us be one in the future. Power to all of us.
White people in America think that Blacks are pushing them too fast, and they are experiencing what they have begun to call the white backlash.
About law and order, because he never talks about justice. But Black people fall for that same argument, and they go around talking about lawbreakers. We did not make the laws in this country. We are neither morally nor legally confined to those laws. Those laws that keep them up keep us down. You got to begin to understand that. For 400 years, he taught you white nationalism, and you lapped it up. You taught it to your children. You had your children thinking that everything Black was bad. Black cows don't give good milk. Black hens don't lay eggs. Black for funerals, white for weddings. That's white nationalism. Santa Claus. A white honky who slides down a Black chimney and comes out white. We tend to equate progress with concessions. We can no longer make that mistake. You see, when they gave us that nigger astronaut, you say we were making progress, but I told you they were going to lose him in space. He didn't get that far. You put Adam Clayton Powell in office and you couldn't keep him. What you think they're going to do with Thurgood Marshall when they get tired of him? They gave you Walter Washington of Washington, D.C., and you said we were making progress. That's not progress. See, it's no in between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. That's like telling me you can be a little bit pregnant.
We have come over the way that we knew that you are.
wallets in those posses. We can present thousands and thousands of bodies in the streets if we want to. And we can have all of the soul force and the moral commitment around this world. But a lot of these problems will not be solved until that shaggedly old place called the White House begins to shake and gets on the phone and says, now listen, George, we're coming down there and throw you in jail if you don't stop that mess. That's the only way it's going to be solved. It's not just the sheriff of this county or the mayor or the police commissioner or George Wallace. This problem goes to the very bottom of the United States. And you know, I said it today and I will say it again. If we can't sit at the table, let's knock the...
If it's Saturday night, it's Talk That Matters at Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
And thank you for being with us here again at a Saturday night open mic. Alpha is my co-host, if you're just joining us, and I'm going to go, Alpha, into our chat room. We want to thank India Declare for stopping by tonight. She's one of those early go-to-bed, early rises, and Chicago Stepper is with us tonight. Thank you, Chicago Stepper. It's good to see you. If you'd like to join our chat room, it's at blogtalkradio.com/OCG. And I want to thank Doc Don and House Music Lover for their calls tonight. Alpha, you know, I think we can never exhaust ourselves of this discussion, because if we don't understand how our history is a tool, if we don't understand how it can be used as a tool and what we should have learned from it, you can't learn from something you didn't do. You don't know. And, I mean, I subscribe to Crisis Magazine. Some of the best writing. There is another magazine that comes out of the Department of African American Studies. It's a quarterly at Columbia University. Some of the best writing, some of the most thoughtful ideas and concepts that come from Black scholars. And I'm, you know, and I think that we get stuck on Essence Magazine, which is not a Black publication. I think we get stuck on Jet. And Jet is very good to keep us in touch with what's going on in our community, but there, as India Declare always says, there's a story behind the story. Alpha?
Yes, Janice. Janice, you're absolutely right. In listening for the last hour, 50 minutes, the one thing that we can agree upon is the importance of our Black history and the need for knowledge of it. The one thing that we seem to know, but we're not so reluctant. Just as the Black Panther Party rose, the pushback was to infiltrate, using our own. Just as each and every uprising of slavery was thwarted by our own, you have to understand our history. Of course we do. But you also must understand the reality of what is.
And
Don put it, you know, who is going to sacrifice, make that sacrifice of themselves after seeing what our history is and how they defend our consciousness. They defend against our consciousness with bribery, with murder. They are the common cowards in the way they attack us and have attacked us for hundreds of years.
But you know, one of the things that Kwame Ture and Dr. Clark always said is that the greatest weapon that they have used against us is also this notion of the American dream.
It's the most effective weapon. But what I am simply saying is this. How does the saying go? You own what you know. You own what you know. And we don't know enough. And it's getting worse and worse. As, you know, as we will move on, as we will transition, what will our young know? And that's the biggest crisis that we face, is losing that voice. But you must understand what we are up against. We are up against people with a bigger megaphone, people with bigger financing, and a listless.
But the thing is, we talk about, you know, you and I, we're hunched over, and most of the people in our audience, we're hunched over the TV and the radio. We're listening to talk radio. We're listening to MSNBC and NPR and C-SPAN, but most of the people in our community are not. And one of the things that we have to do is we have to learn that we have to pass the word on. I mean, here's a lesson. When emancipation was coming, most slaves, if you read the slave narrative, heard about this happening about a year before it actually happened. And every slave that came through traveling or coming to work on a plantation or whatever, everyone passed on what they knew.
Virginia.
And that is what we have to start doing. It is not enough to just know.
Well, I agree, Janice. I agree. But even back then, communication was through word of mouth. Today, it's mass media. Today, what is overwhelmingly perceived is that what comes out of that box, what they say on that in that box and on that tube, is what is right. And like you said, there are not enough of us who are paying attention because of the situation and because of the constant pushback. And it's pushback.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, there is no pushback. Nobody in our community is talking about the crisis of education, the coming crisis of economics, based on what this Congress is going to be doing. They're not talking about the crisis, the housing crisis. They're not.
Well,
that's what we have to start doing. I can't tell you how many people that over the last, say, 5 years that I turned on to MSNBC.
Well,
you know, I cannot tell you. We cannot keep making excuses. People don't have to have all of the detail. They have to be given the tools. They have we have to say, I'm constantly saying to members of my family as I talk to them in personal conversations about something else, you need to stop watching Fox News. The other night, my mother was telling me about how she was watching the news, and I said, what news are you watching? She said, I'm not watching the Fox News. I'm not watching the Fox News, because I have been hammering over and over that is not news. The other is that we need to start giving our children, the children in our neighborhoods, the children that we know, We need to buy books for some of our community centers that have Black history in it. You know, I think we're not doing enough. We're not doing right by our children. We want to thank you all for being with us here at Our Common Ground and on our promo for TruthWorks. TruthWorks has 3 days of programming now, and we're hoping to add 2 more. We're going to be inviting Black Unity Radio to TruthWorks very soon in the next week or so, and we're hoping that we will have a new program that does nothing but deal with the issues of human rights in America. We thank you for being with us, and we hope you'll join Dr. Deborah at 8 o'clock on Tuesday night at TruthWorks Network with A Heart for My People. And it's Thursday night for Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles at 8 p.m. And, of course, every Saturday, 3 to 5, it's Just Damn Radio with Alpha. Alpha, it was a great show today. I couldn't participate in the chat room, but I was listening, and it was just a great show. I want to thank Don for your call and House Music Lover for your call. Great points. And my book, I am recommending, I think, that every Black person ought to read without any question. If you want real history, it should be They Came Before the Mayflower by Lerone Bennett Jr. Thank you so much for being with us. Alpha, again, thank you. And we'll see you here, right here, at Our Common Ground. Let me suggest something. Read the ISIS Papers Before Next Saturday Night by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Good night, Alpha. Good night, folks. Bro. Thanks for being with us.
With my co-host, Alpha, I'm Janice Graham. Next Saturday, 10 p.m., I'll be listening for you.
God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, Thou who has brought us thus far along the way, Thou who has by Thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray. Lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met Thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world, we forget Thee. Shadowed beneath Thy hand, may we forever stand, true to Thee, O God, and true to our native land.